All right, welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. The great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. It is Tuesday, 2 for Tuesday. Yeah, man, 2 for Tuesday. One artist, two songs. We'll play them later. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. All right, it is time for our monthly visit with Tom Appel, publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. You can follow him on Twitter at car_guy_Tom. And we're going to be talking about the latest car and automotive news. And if you have questions or concerns or anything like that in terms of the world of automotive or car, you're looking to buy a car or whatever, need some advice, need some help, Tom is here to answer your questions and help you out. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Let's welcome Tom back to the show. Hi, Tom.
Well, good morning.
How are you, sir?
I am good. Thanks for having me.
Ah, absolutely. Always a pleasure. Tell everybody about Consumer Guide Automotive and all that stuff.
Yeah, consumerguide.com. That's where all of our new car and used car reviews live. But if you aren't looking for a new car or a used car but do like to read fun stuff about cars, check out our blog. You can get there from consumerguide.com or just go directly to the cgdailydrive.com.
All right, and it's all there, consumerguide.com. Tom, you join us every month, and we're always happy to have you on. How's your summer been going?
It's been going good. It went fast.
Yeah, it has flown by, hasn't it?
Yeah, it went fast. My kid goes back to school in 2 weeks. So,
oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that fast. It went that fast.
Well, you got to spend some time with her, though, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's been a great summer.
Yeah, very, very cool. Okay, what have you been driving lately? Let's talk a little bit about that.
I've driven two really interesting cars, both Toyotas in the last week. One was the Lexus LC500. This is Lexus's big luxury coupe. It's an insane car. It looks at any distance, it looks like a Ferrari, but it really rides and is built like a Toyota, which means that it's just going to be more affordable to own and operate, but you get the great startling looks. I love the car. It's a big coupe. I fit well in it. It's quick. It's beautifully finished inside. Great car.
So that passes on all levels. Anybody else at Consumer Guide drive that one?
Oh, yeah, yeah. We got that one passed around. I think all the editors got into it. Yeah, that's a favorite. It looks fantastic.
Great. Okay, what else?
And I am driving the Toyota Corolla XSE. Toyota redesigned the Corolla about a year ago. They introduced the hatchback version first, and then the sedan is out now. I'm driving the sedan. And I have never been a fan of the Corolla until this generation. This is just a really nice car now. It's just a little bit more lively. It feels more like a small car that someone young might want to drive. Much more in the vein of the Honda Civic than it used to be. Mm. But I'm impressed. We've been getting fantastic mileage with these cars. We're always breaking 30 miles per gallon.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, that's really great. Boy, the Honda Civic. Man, that was a popular car, right?
It was and remains, yeah. Even though car sales are dwindling as SUV sales grow, the Civic is kind of holding on to its niche.
Yeah, I mean, I dated two different women who had Civics. I don't know what that means, but...
When I met my wife, she was driving around in a Civic, a very, very old Civic.
I don't know what it is, man. It's very strange, but I've seen those cars around for a long time, and they seem to, you know, and both of the girls that I dated who had the Civic seemed very happy with their Civic, so...
Civics are the kind of cars that dads want their daughters to drive. they kind of feel good about them. The Corollas are like that, too.
Yeah, well, it's great. By the way, if you guys want to jump in here, if you have a question or a concern, or you're going to get a car and you need some advice, automotive or car-related stuff, right now at 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. We did get a text in already from the 773 area code, Tom.
Oh, okay.
And they ask, what does Tom think of the 2020 Kia Telluride?
Oh, it's fantastic. For people who don't know what that is, Hyundai and Kia are kind of the same company, but in the U.S. they do business entirely independently. But they both have built new, very large crossovers off new shared architecture. There's the Kia Telluride and then the Hyundai Palisade. They are similar but different enough that people who are considering a large crossover should drive both of them. But the Telluride is fantastic. Recently drove it. It gets surprising mileage for a vehicle that size. The interior is really beautifully finished, but most importantly, it makes fantastic use of space. If you need to put adults into the second row or even the third row, this is a great vehicle for that.
Okay. All right. So recommended all the way around then.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So, how often do you guys drive? I mean, like everybody in the office there at the Consumer Guide, they are driving different cars all the time, correct?
That's correct. Yeah, we have four regular editors who take part in our Car of the Year voting, our Best Buy voting, and we try to get every editor into every car we get through the office.
Mm-hmm. And so does it? You guys take into account the time of year that you guys are driving the car as well?
We do, and we mention it when we need to. It's a big deal when we drive electric vehicles or hybrid vehicles because the batteries are seriously battery performance is seriously compromised by cold weather. So we have to account for that and point that out because just in Chicago, and this is a problem for EV drivers in Chicago, you can lose up to a third of your range in the deep of winter.
Wow, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Because it gets really cold here, obviously. I'm not speaking out of turn here. I think we know that, but that's really interesting. Now, and so, when you're taking in that into account, like let's say you know because it was really hot and muggy yesterday, and it's going to be pretty muggy today. You guys take that into account too, and what it was kind of the comfort of the vehicle in that regard.
The heat is less of an issue, but it can become an issue if we're just constantly cranking the AC, which can hurt fuel economy. Also, when things get really hot, again, EV batteries don't really like it when it's very hot as well. But cold is really more of a factor in Chicago driving than heat.
Yeah, clearly. And also, do you guys, what happens, you know, if you're test driving one of these vehicles or a couple of these vehicles and we get like 10, 12 inches of snow?
Yeah, we just endure it.
Yeah.
And that's what everyone at the office, when we see a storm coming, jockeys for the all-wheel drive vehicles.
Yeah.
Sometimes that just doesn't work.
Right. You can see, I can see those guys. I can see everybody in the with the all-terrain vehicle, if you can get it.
If you can.
Yeah.
But it doesn't always work that way.
I don't know, this is a stupid question. Has a car ever broken down when you were test driving it?
Yeah, unfortunately. We had a situation recently, and this was a prototype, and it was delivered to us as a prototype. But Jaguar has developed an electric vehicle called the I-Pace. And at some point during its tenure in our office, it just stopped taking a charge. So basically, it was just dead in the water. We couldn't charge it, so we couldn't drive it. So they had to pick it up with a flatbed. So we're working with Jaguar to get a replacement vehicle come through the office, and we acknowledge that they said it was a prototype vehicle. But yeah, it happens sometimes.
Really, that's got to be so crazy when that happens. Brand new car.
It is.
Yeah. Wow. Wow. So does do you put that into the when you do the review? You say, hey, the car broke down.
We will mention it when we drive the final vehicle, but because it was a prototype and because there was a final vehicle coming, and
right.
If the final vehicle actually, the sellable final production vehicle, performs as it should, it'll just be a footnote.
Okay. Glenn says, do you have thoughts on the new electric VW van?
The ID Buzz, which is cool as heck. And Buzz may or may not be a reference to it being a microbus in which people may have or may not have. I don't know.
Right.
But it looks cool as heck. And that'll be, I think, the second of Volkswagen's ID vehicles that'll be coming out soon. ID is Volkswagen's new brand for electric vehicles.
And so you think it's a great ride then?
Oh, haven't driven it yet. I just think it's cool.
Oh, you just think it's cool. Okay, so we'll get a test on that at some point. Okay, Tom, hang on, okay?
Will do.
All right, Tom Appel is with us. He is from, of course, Consumer Guide Automotive, and he's here to answer any and all of your car-related questions or concerns. It's 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. And, of course, you can follow him on Twitter at car_guy_Tom or go to consumerguide.com. All right, quick break, and then we'll come back. More car talk right after the news, which is up next. All right, welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiCilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. It is Tuesday. Yeah, me too for Tuesday. We'll get those requests going. One artist, two songs a little bit later on. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. In honor of the Hobbs and Nobbs, or the Hobbs and Shaw movie that came out over the weekend, we are going to jump into a couple of topics that are related to that. And that would be going to do the best buddy cop movies of all time and the best and worst movie spinoffs, which basically... This new movie falls under both of those categories. So that's all coming up on the show here. 312-981-7200 for talk and text and two for Tuesday requests. Tom Appel is with us. He joins us monthly to talk cars and automotive stuff. He's the publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. You can follow him on Twitter at car_guy_Tom. And he's here to answer all your questions. And we're going to talk car news as well. 312-981-7200. Let's welcome Tom back. Tom, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right. One of the news stories here says that there's mass casualties from automotive cyber attacks. This was in the Tribune. Can you talk a little bit about this?
Yeah, or potential mass casualties, I think, is the way the story is going.
Yeah.
And it's interesting in that a group, Consumer Watchdog, which I think people have heard of, it's a California
sure.
group, and they're fairly active, is predicting perilous cyber attacks on the American automotive fleet if something isn't done to allow motorists to switch off connectivity. This seems slightly hyperbolic to me in that cars as yet are not as connected as people think they are.
Yeah.
Even if you have something like OnStar or you're receiving on-air updates or something like that, it doesn't mean that those systems, the systems of your car, can be activated or reached through that sort of cellular action. I think that what we need to worry about is in the future when we get closer to autonomous vehicles, and those are going to be connected by probably 5G cellular, that's when I think the time to worry is. But they were talking about how by 2020, according to this article, and I think according to Consumer Watchdog, by 2020, 75% of the vehicles on the road will be vulnerable to some sort of cyber attack. But some sort of cyber attack is a little vague, and I'm not entirely sure what it is that can happen.
Yeah.
There was this famous case a couple years ago of a couple of high-quality hackers trying to get into a Jeep, and they needed access to the Jeep in advance to make it work. So we're not seeing this stuff yet. It's worth worrying about. I think it's worth certainly protecting ourselves from, but I don't think that we're heading into dire straits just yet.
Okay, but we got to keep an eye on it, correct?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. As we get closer to autonomous vehicles, I think this becomes a very real threat.
Okay. All right. We'll keep updates on that and talk about it soon. We got a couple more texts here, Tom.
Okay.
630 area code says, is it true that if you drive less than 25 miles a week, you're doing internal damage?
Kind of, sort of. The problem is, and this is less of a problem now because everyone's using some sort of synthetic oil or partially synthetic oil, it used to be that if you didn't drive a car enough, moisture would accumulate in the crankcase and it would start to degrade your oil and your oil would get all wet and foamy. That's less of a thing now than it used to be.
Yeah.
But the other problem, too, is that you're not using your brakes, so rust starts to accumulate on the rotors. Fluid can accumulate in the brake lines. There is stuff that happens. You should drive your car a little bit more than that. And if you're not going to drive your car for a while, you should take it out for a really good drive every couple of weeks.
Okay. All right. That's good advice. Carrie says, Tom, two questions. Where is the new Ford Ranger? And with Volvo moving production to China, are there any concerns about quality?
Oh, two great questions. The Ford Ranger is out. We just drove it. We have a review up on the website, but we drove an XLT. Nice vehicle. I'm not sure it stands out in the compact pickup truck field, but it's very good and worth shopping for. As for Volvo, Volvo does some production in China now, and there's a few vehicles available in the U.S. that are Chinese-built, and we have not noticed any difference in quality driving those vehicles.
Wow.
As someone at Volvo told us, it is a Volvo factory that just happens to be in China. Which is a great way to put it.
Right,
and,
sure.
And, yeah, I mean, the only real difference is it just travels a little bit further before it gets to your dealership.
Okay, all right. And the 773 area code, a different one, says, are Jeep Wranglers or Renegades noisy inside on long highway road trips, and how about the gas mileage?
Yes and yes, but not as noisy as they used to be. Great questions. The Jeep... The Jeep Wrangler, which is the big iconic Jeep thing that we still think of when we think of Jeep,
was redesigned
last year, and it is a little bit bigger, a little bit quieter, and just a little bit more refined. Drove one on the highway very recently, and I thought there was just a bit of wind noise, but it wasn't really obtrusive or annoying. As for fuel economy, we recently drove a version with a new 2-liter mild hybrid turbo. And we saw 23 miles per gallon, which is the best fuel economy we've ever seen with a Wrangler. And we're still trying to get used to the fact that Wranglers can break 20 miles per gallon.
That's a wow. Okay. All right. Well, we got a few more stories here that we want to get to. How about this Audi ex-CEO? He's been charged with fraud in that legendary VW diesel cheating scandal.
Yeah. This is the amazing story that won't go away.
It really is.
And it's amazing because Volkswagen's already paying the bill for this. If anyone's familiar with the commercials for Electrify America, I might have the wrong name, but I think it's Electrify America. That is actually funded by Volkswagen punishment, punitive damages that they paid. And they're putting up charging stations and shopping malls and parking lots across the country on their own dime. So they're already paying fines and penalties on this in the U.S. But what people may not realize is that Audi is a division of Volkswagen, and they developed a V6 engine that was more or less a parallel development with the small four-cylinder that most of us associate with the scandal. So there was actually different management involved and different people involved who were also complicit, and that's how this Audi guy got himself into trouble. Rupert Stadler, apparently, according to German authorities, at least knew about the scandal or about the cheating and didn't do anything to stop it. I don't think they can prove more than that.
Yeah.
But that's enough, and this guy's probably going to spend some time in the slammer.
It's an unbelievable story. I mean, I remember it. But when did it break? 2015?
That sounds right. Yeah, 15 or 16,
I mean, I remember when we first talked about it, how stunning a story it is.
Yeah, and I remember at the time, too, we were talking about how much money was involved, and the estimate in the most recent story I read is that Volkswagen has so far spent $33 billion to make this right.
Man, oh, man. That is unbelievable.
It is a staggering sum of money.
It is unbelievable. So this guy here, then Rupert Stadler, he's going to go away for a while.
Yeah, he's going to join Martin Winterkorn, who was the head of Volkswagen at the time, also found guilty of, at the very least, of knowing about it.
Yeah. Boy, that's a great name. What's his name? Martin what? Winterkorn?
Winterkorn, yeah.
That's a fantastic name.
It is a good name.
All right. All right, how about this? What's a smart tire? Tom, can you help us out with this?
I can. It's the last thing anyone ever thought needed to be smart.
Yeah, that's true.
I still don't have a smart toothbrush, but I'm about to talk about smart tires. But the tire thing's kind of interesting. There's three things that are falling under the umbrella of smart tires. One of them is self-sealing tires, which is really not new technology, but it's being handled differently now and more effectively. And then there are tires that are non-inflated tires, which is fascinating. And then there's a type of tire that is going to be used as part of the car's safety systems and will actually report back to the car certain conditions that can be detected best through the tire, like black ice or cold weather or just a lack of traction.
Wow.
But the most interesting part about this is the new non-inflatable tire, which actually uses rubber fins instead of an inflatable bladder. So you will see from the side of the tire these fins or blades that radiate, you know, around the tire. And they're fascinating. They've been around for a long time, and you might see them on construction equipment, but it's looking like we're finally going to see them on cars. The beauty of this is that they should last forever and that they would never blow out, so you'd never have a flat. So they're really cool. They look a little bit weird, and I don't know how designers are going to work around the sort of bladed fan look of them. But General Motors is committed to putting a set on production vehicles by 2024. So we'll see what they look like.
And what kind of money is that going to set you back? I mean, it's got to be pretty expensive. Obviously, very expensive tires, correct?
I don't know. They should mount pretty much like regular tires and be used on regular wheels, perhaps. As for expensive, they'll probably be very expensive at first, but they may actually come down and be less expensive than traditional tires.
Okay. Well, what are some of the other tires that we're talking about here?
Well, we have the self-sealing tires, and then we talked about the tires with the with the sensors in them. And I don't know if a lot of people know that they probably have tire pressure monitors. Those are built into their wheels, but don't really involve the tires. One of the interesting things about the self-sealing tire is that they're developing a tire now that can self-inflate, which is fascinating technology.
Wow, that's amazing. That is well, you know, okay, well, who are doing these things? Who's responsible for some of these? These are
the big names right now are Michelin, and Michelin's working on the airless tires, and then Bridgestone's working on a lot of this stuff right now as well.
What are the quiet tires?
Quiet tires are interesting, and they're usually associated with something like touring tires, but they use a different compound, usually just on the immediate surface of the tire, and could be great on the highway.
Okay. What about the magnetic levitation?
I haven't heard much about maglev in recent years, but we'll see where that comes from. But maglev is an old technology. The Disney Unirail, what's that called? The Unirail.
Oh yeah. The monorail.
That was said to be maglev. That never actually happened.
Oh,
that
no.
Really, actually rode on tires. But maglev is awesome in that you wouldn't use a tire at all most of the time because you would actually use magnetic forces to keep the vehicle afloat.
That's crazy. Wow. Yeah, I was thinking monorail. Monorail is from The Simpsons. I was getting my rails all mixed up here.
There you go. Yes.
Monorail was from The Simpsons. Classic episode of The Simpsons right there. Let's see. Some more texts have come in, Tom.
Okay.
Caribbean Bob says, my wife and I are thinking about leasing a Mazda 3 hatchback. What do you think of the Mazda, and when is the best time to lease?
The Mazda 3 was just redesigned. The hatchback is very nice. The whole Mazda 3 lineup is great. And that's a good car to lease, too, because the resale value is very strong on those, so you can get a very favorable lease payment. In terms of when's the best time to lease, I don't know if there's any time better than another. The rules of leasing and the rules of purchasing are the same. You still want to negotiate the best deal you can, and there's still some truth to trying to do that at the end of the month or towards the end of the year if you can. But leasing specifically, I'm not sure there's a better time than any other.
Okay. How about this? Hi, Tom, from the 706 area code. Which Subaru SUV or crossover is your favorite and why?
Oh, geez. Well, Subaru makes a bunch of stuff right now. They just built the new Ascent. That's their midsize crossover. They make the Forester. That's their compact crossover. And there's the Crosstrek, which is the compact or subcompact crossover. Plus, there's still the Outback, which is the wagon based on the Legacy. Of the four, just full disclosure, we actually own a Crosstrek here at Casa Appel, and we love it.
Mm-hmm.
Although I think next time we might go with a Forester, which is the compact crossover. But they're all really kind of nice.
Okay, great. Tom, hang on, okay?
Will do.
Tom Appel is with us from Consumer Guide Automotive. You can check him out at consumerguide.com. And also, you can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at car_guy_Tom. If you want to sneak in here, we got a few more minutes with Tom. It's 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200 for any and all car and automotive-related questions. We'll be right back. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. Coming up at 5, Steve Grzanich has the opening bell. And coming up at 6, the great Steve Cochran with your morning drive. And coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. All right. We are in the middle of our monthly visit with Tom Appel, publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at car_guy_Tom. And we're talking all things automotive and car related. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Tom, welcome back.
Thank you.
There was a Chrysler concept story that you wanted to talk about. What's going on there?
I did. This has been a story that we've been bouncing around at the office for a couple of months now, and I finally decided to take the time and try and write it. And it's about a period of time in Chrysler's history when it didn't look like the company was going to survive, and what they did to kind of distract the public from that story. And that distraction was something known as ENVI, E-N-V-I. It was short for environmental, and it was a division that they created or claimed to have actually meant to create, which was going to create hybrid, plug-in hybrid, and other green vehicles. And the timing of this is fantastic because everything was just collapsing on Chrysler. But in 2008, September of 2008, they introduced Envy at a press event, I think in Chelsea, Michigan. And this was just after the Daimler-Chrysler relationship had fallen apart. And it looked like Chrysler was going to end up in the hands of Cerberus, which was a venture capital company that probably was just going to pare the company down. So this wasn't looking good. Gas had spiked earlier in the year at like $4 a gallon. The stock market was on the verge of collapsing. Everything was ugly for Chrysler. So they launched these electric vehicles. And the great thing about the story is that they were so transparently not developed. They were mostly just vehicles that wore EV stickers on the outside.
Oh, wow.
But they made some pretty bold claims
wow.
for the vehicles. The most convincing of them was a vehicle, and this one is actually kind of cool. It was called the Dodge Circuit, except that it was actually a Lotus sports car that they had actually stuffed batteries into. Now, that was a running, functioning car.
Oh, my God.
But the rest of the cars really appeared to just have EV stickers on them. So
that's really incredible.
It is. And the beauty of it, this is September 2008. Things got really bad for them. And by January of 2009 at the Detroit Auto Show, they launched a couple of more vehicles in the Envy lineup, but displayed all five of their vehicles there. And it was just so clear to everyone in attendance that these were fake. There was a nice concept they called the 200, and it was a really good design. But the whole talk of this Volt-like extended-range hybrid electric drivetrain just sounded like hooey. They had no history with this, no acumen in building these things, and they're talking about bringing one out by 2010. Anyway, it was just a couple months after that. The press kit is beautiful, by the way. I finally went and bought one on eBay because I had lost mine.
Uh-huh.
But it's filled with pictures and no substance. But just a couple months later, they ended up essentially declaring bankruptcy and forced into the hands of Fiat. So during this Envy thing, ENVI, this thing happened between Daimler Chrysler and Fiat, this very short period of time. And the minute Fiat took over Chrysler, they killed the Envy project.
Oh, man. Wow, what a crazy story.
I love this story because no one seems to remember it. Just the fireworks with GM and Chrysler going to Washington to beg for money and all the stories surrounding the financial woes kind of killed any interest in this story. But it was out there, and there's pictures of these cars online, and they're fabulous.
Wow, that's amazing. That is really crazy. Everybody, check out the piece that that Tom wrote. You can check it out at consumerguide.com. 312 area code says, Hyundai had an Azera, but ceased production. I need to know what was replaced if it has a similar model.
No, there isn't a Hyundai, but I believe there is still a Kia Cadenza. But I have to check.
Uh-huh.
Those were both large mid-sized cars along the lines of the Toyota Avalon, and they never sold well for Kia or for Hyundai. But I think they are both gone, and I think they have not been replaced. But you might be able to still find old ones on the lot, maybe.
Okay. All right. And then finally, the most stolen cars in America. Let's talk a little bit about that. They got big engines.
Yeah, and I'm kind of at a loss to explain these. I've been looking for a pattern, and I don't see it.
So, okay.
But, yeah, these are reported by the Highway Loss Data Institute. That's a not-for-profit that is financed by insurance companies, so I think we can take this information as well-sourced. But, yeah, the...
So which ones are the ones that were that are most stolen?
Yeah, interestingly, the Dodge Charger, the Dodge Challenger, the Infiniti QX50, the Infiniti QX80, and then the GMC Sierra. Of those, the Sierra makes perfect sense to me because there are hundreds of thousands of pickups on the road, and those parts will fit a lot of those, so that makes sense to me.
Okay.
As for the Dodge vehicles, the Charger and the Challenger, they're generally high-performance vehicles, and there's a lot of people who could use those parts. I do not understand the Infinities.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense. The Charger and the Charger and the Challenger are both cool cars, though.
They're cool cars. Yeah. You can use the parts. A chop shop would love to have any piece of them because they can sell them.
Yeah.
So that works really well. I'm not sure that's true about the Infiniti models on this list.
Yeah, I don't understand. That just seems very strange to me. That I'm going to steal me an Infiniti.
The weirder part about it, too, is the Infiniti QX80 is a fairly expensive vehicle that should spend most of its time in private lots or in a garage. So I don't even know how much access these have to these vehicles.
That's a crazy story. Oh.
Yeah.
All right.
It's very weird.
Okay. All right. And by the way, people can get the newsletter, right, at the Consumer Guide website?
Yeah. Just go to Consumer Guide, go to Contact Us, and leave me your email address, and then I will send you every Tuesday an update of everything that's new on the website. And that's the only thing we ever send out. You won't end up on any other list, and you won't get more email than that.
There you go. That's it. And so if you want to subscribe, just go to consumerguide.com, and you can follow Tom on Twitter and Facebook at car_guy_Tom. Tom, always a pleasure to have you on, and have a great month, and we'll talk to you next time.
Yeah, the pleasure is mine. Thanks for having me.
Okay, buddy. Tom Appel, everybody. He's great. Publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive, and helps out with any automotive and car questions that you will have. He joins us once a month.